Josh?
I think, Rob, in the
I think
business.
I have to call you.
No, this is not how it works. Well, folks, this is a fitting start to the restart of the Beloit Daily News Sports Podcast, which I think we might have to rename to see what had happened was Rob and I, Rob Lucas, joining me on the Beloit Daily News Sports Podcast for the first time in a long time. We had recorded a wonderful, fact-filled, entertaining, rollicking 27-minute podcast regarding
best you've ever done.
Absolutely 27 minutes of goodness, and regarding the Brewers opening day, baseball, all that stuff. And see, what had happened was working with a new audio program here. And it recorded my voice, clearly the more important, but
right.
It only recorded my voice and not Rob. So the podcast would have been extremely one-sided and not good listening.
A lot of odd silences.
Yeah, very odd, long silences. And so we decided to give this another shot. If this doesn't work, clearly you'll have never heard this. And we'll probably never attempt another podcast, at least over the phone again. But to give a brief recap, we are here to educate, entertain, and inform. And, you know, we're going to be doing this more now that we have this tool. I want to give a couple shout-outs. J.R. Radcliffe of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, who does his own podcast regarding high school sports in the Milwaukee area, which is fantastic, and also the Milwaukee Brewers podcast, which one, by the way, since we have spoken last, Rob, has actually dropped. So you should check that out with Todd Rosiak and Tom Hargecourt. So
does he talk pro wrestling with Tom and Todd at all? 'Cause I know
I'm sure it does. They've only had three of them, and I've listened to every minute, so it has not come up yet. But I think JR's into it. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter, but you should. And Todd and Tom are obviously wrestling aficionados, which is a problem unto itself. You guys, I don't understand it. I never will. I won't try.
We like our stories. We enjoy our stories.
Yeah. Well, it's horrendous. But, yes, those two are certainly big wrestling fans. So there's sure to be some wrestling talk at some point. The other shot, so he turned me onto this software, which it was my fault. It was not JR's fault. It was a good software, it was a user error. And then I still have no idea what happened. And then the other one to the people that have encouraged me, to keep making these podcasts, our four or five listeners out there, Sachin Singh down in Chicago, and we've had others that said, what happened to the podcast? So now that we've got this, Rob, fill us in on what's going on with you, because you've got some big news too.
I saw a movie today, and I just got some Panera. Is that what you're talking about?
Wait a second. Panera? That is the choice of every 53-year-old white woman in the world. You go with Panera? That is your choice?
No, I needed somewhere that I could write my article for you guys.
Yeah.
I got a cookie and a nice lemonade. Where else do I have internet? My options are limited.
It's still a terrible call. There's got to be other ones. No, but I'm referring to, well, your current location, which I'm here in lovely Clinton, and it's you know, nice and warm and beautiful out. You are somewhere else. Why are you right now in Denver and or Colorado Springs?
I'm in Denver right now. It is raining. I sit inside my wife's car. She started her new job today in Denver, and we are moving. Well, she's already moved to Colorado Springs, and I'll be moving there in June once my school year is done. I just got actually a new job yesterday at a high school.
Well, congratulations. This is big news. This would be typical. Rob and I exchanged several text messages yesterday regarding the 24th and 25th roster spot on the Brewers. He neglected to tell me at any of those times that he had gotten a new job. This is something we talked about in the last podcast through the magic
Personally
of text message.
Sometime in the future.
What? Yeah. We extend congratulations to you anyway. And but
I have a small baseball tip to this, though. The school I got a job at is the alma mater of Chase Headley, third baseman of the Yankees. So is he the Padres again?
No, I don't know where he's at, but we'll find out tomorrow if he's a Padre, I guess. So the reason this long, rambling, and roughly incoherent intro to this podcast, we are, of course, talking 2018 Major League Baseball. We are focusing on the Milwaukee Brewers, and we thank you for joining us. And, Rob, my first question, and I'm going to switch it around because I'm not going to ask you in the same order because any hint of spontaneity would be gone then, since we just literally had this conversation about 2.5 hours ago. So let's start where we ended last time. Okay. So the and I'll ask this a little differently. I'll try to switch it up. You know, bullpens are something that, you know, are by nature just volatile. One year's great, one year's bad, and that's from bullpens as a whole to bullpens individually, to bullpen pitchers, relievers individually. So we had some ups last year. We had some big time ups in Corey Knebel. You know, you had a guy like, you know, Torres had a pretty good year. Hughes had a pretty good year. They're gone. Swarzak had a real great couple of months. He's gone. You've got some additions in Albers, and we think Hoover, although as of this recording Wednesday afternoon, the official roster has not been named, but Albers, Hoover, I mean, you've got Hader for a full season. What are your thoughts on the structure and the strength and quality of this Brewers bullpen?
I think there's a lot of names to throw at the wall and see who's going to work out. I think it's with a bullpen that's basically what you can do, unless you have, you know, like a Yankees bullpen, you know, where you have Betances and Chapman, or you have, you know, Cody Allen and Andrew Miller or something like that. Unless you have like three or four studs lined up, you just keep throwing names against the wall. And I think Albers is actually a really underrated signing. He was pretty good last year. He's not a huge strikeout guy, but he's very solid. He'll be a good seventh inning type guy. Hader, I don't know how, if they're going to use him. I know I saw a quote by Council. They're not sure if he can be two innings and then no innings, or one and one and one and try to use him a little bit more often, but less, you know, less innings each game. But he is obviously an X factor, and Knebel was so good last year. If he's 75% of what he was last year, he's still a top 10 closer, isn't he? Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you know, he might not set any, you know, new major league records like he did last year, right? You know, striking at least one guy out in an inning basically, you know, for the entire year, or at least the entire first half. But yeah, I mean, he's a guy that can have a little regression, but you still love to have him and feel, you know, grateful that he's your closer. The big question, you know, is who is going to step up along with Hader, who yesterday's outing notwithstanding had an outstanding spring. You know, who's going to step up as that primary setup guy? You know, and it looks to be Albers, I would say. I'd say Albers and Hader, you know, in the back end. You've got Barnes, and then Jeremy Jeffress, who seems to, you know, only throw well when he's a Brewer. So, and then, you know, there are some minor league options. We talked about Taylor Williams as a guy that, you know, might not even make the opening day roster, but by June could be your eighth inning guy. That's the kind of upside that Williams has.
Yeah, and we've been talking with Taylor Williams for 3 years, I feel like.
Yeah.
But Taylor Williams, another guy that I was just doing a little bit of research before that I kind of forgot. Two guys I forgot about. One guy's more of a starter guy, but Luis Ortiz, I kind of forget he's our prospect. And Freddy Peralta, you know, who's going to be like a double-A-ish guy, but like electric arm. Those guys that you can call up in August and September just for a few innings, and maybe they catch lightning in a bottle, maybe become, you know, a solid arm for you. I think you're right, though. Like, the bullpen tomorrow is going to be very different from the bullpen in June, which will be very different from the bullpen probably in September.
Yeah, I mean, no question. And that's, you know, we certainly saw that last year. You know, when you started with Neftali Feliz as your closer, and then, you know, Knebel was definitely a late-inning guy, you know, a highly regarded prospect, but and then, you know, by the end of the year, it's Knebel, it's it's Hader and Swarzak, who were not even on the roster when the opening day roster was released. So, it's sure to change, but I do feel as though if there are issues to begin the season, that they do have depth, and depth is one way I'll kind of segue right into that starting rotation. That is certainly, I would say, the biggest question that faces this team in terms of can they up that win total from 86 to last year to 90, 91, whatever it might take to, you know, challenge for a wild card, because I think we both feel like the Cubs profile as a team, barring catastrophe, that, you know, is going to win between 96 and 105 games or something like that, or 93 at the low end, I would say. You know, they've got that rotation. Obviously, the lineup is prodigious and all that stuff. We don't want to talk about the Cubs, especially when we're talking good about the Cubs on this podcast, so we'll move on. But I do think a wild card is certainly in play, but to do that, they're going to have to get good starting pitching. What are your thoughts on the construction of this rotation, and are we an arm short out there?
I think it's a rotation that's built on the idea of just sort of holding water, holding steady till Nelson comes back in June, and they make a trade in June or July. I think Suter, like last year, he showed if you can throw him for just two, at most, maybe three times to the order, but hopefully more like two and a half, you know, five innings. He's a very solid starter. Woodruff should be a little bit better this year. Good ground ball stuff, has decent control. And we kind of, like I said, I forgot about Luis Ortiz. He's still a top 10 prospect in their system. Corbin Burns should probably get a shot at some point this year if someone gets hurt. And then Nelson comes back along with Chase. I think Shashin's going to have a nice year, you know, a low 4 ERA. And then you acquire somebody. You find somebody that can be that guy to get you over the hump later on. But I think a lot of it will rely early on how effective Suter and Woodruff can be in those four or five spots.
You know, it's funny that you omitted the guy's name that has made 65 starts the last 2 years, and I do it all the time too when I'm thinking about it, and it's easy to just kind of take for granted Zach Davies, because that's kind of what he's done, is just be a guy that's going to throw, you know, 180 innings and give you some nights he's not going to have it, and he'll give up five runs in the first inning, as I was witness to firsthand a couple of times. And then sometimes, he'll give you seven innings and not give up a run. Or we went on a great streak, last year, and really has put up consistent numbers. Do you feel like Davies is, you know, because we were unsure going into last year, especially with the April he had, you know, what exactly is this guy? Because he doesn't light up the radar gun. But do you feel like pretty confident that Davies is going to put up another 33 start, you know, sub four, you know, solid performance and, you know, help this team win a bunch of games in the starts?
I actually love Zach Davies. I feel bad for omitting him.
Yeah.
I know you don't care, but he's been on my fantasy team the last 3 years because of the consistency.
Right.
His ability to go out there and even like against the Cubs, against good offenses, he's able to do a pretty good job of limiting them. I know he talked about working on his leg strength this year in the off season, not for like extra miles per hour, because I saw he like touched 88 the other day on the radar gun, but it's so he can pitch into that sixth and seventh inning and not get tired like he did last year. Like that could actually be a very big factor for him if he's able to, you know, get into that sixth and seventh, that third and fourth time through, and still keep his control at where it was at the beginning. He's a very tough pitcher to hit, and you're not sure why. He doesn't throw hard, but he manages to get a lot of outs, and I think he's a really, really important part of that rotation.
You know, I saw a stat on Twitter today that talked about, I don't know what the parameters were, but it was a relatively large sample size, and in this X amount of innings, or the X amount of date, you know, that since what of last year, Chase Anderson had the fifth best ERA in baseball at like 2.79 or something. And again, this was not a three start sample. So I believe that Anderson is kind of holds the key to this because he, while I totally agree that the 4 and 5 guys need to hold up, I do feel like there are enough options to where eventually they'll get that to a good point until Nelson returns. But Anderson really needs to be the guy that you can go to and, hey, let's not only pitch 6 innings and give up 3 runs, but, you know, let's pitch 7 or 8 and give up 0 or 1 every once in a while when the offense, you know, needs a break or struggles and you can still win games 2-1. Do you feel like that, you know, this is a mirage here or that Chase can continue what he was able to do last year?
No, I think Chase is a good pitcher. I mean, he won't probably be a 2.75 ERA guy, but if he's a 3.25 ERA guy, that's a top 10 ERA in the National League.
Yep.
You know, you don't, like in this day and age, like last year, assuming that the baseball is still juice, if you have a 3.5 ERA, you are, you know, a very, like an above average pitcher, a very much above average. So if he could be 3.25, and I think he's really a key to helping rest the bullpen, being able to go those 6-7 innings once in a while along with Davies, Chasheen should, because I think they'll have some bullpen days when Suter and Woodruff are throwing where they only get through 4 or 5. And then they'll have to kind of dig into some of those long guys. So I think it is really important that Chase does it. But I think he absolutely can. I think his peripherals were solid. His FIP was at least in line enough with his ERA to make him look like a pretty viable starter.
Well, we'll find out. You know, we'll find out starting Thursday, 3:10. It should be a national holiday. Opening day is always a great one. And, you know, Anderson will obviously – be pitching in front of what is a pretty solid defense, and of course with the help of a lineup that against lefties, while it should be good against lefties and righties, provided that Braun can do the job defensively, this lineup, especially against lefties, don't you feel like it's got to be one of the best in the league?
They will mash the baseball against every lefty.
Yeah,
even good lefties. They will hammer, you know, most of the time. They'll get caught, you know, and against a guy like Clayton Richard, that's the type of guy that seems to beat the Brewers.
Yes.
Isn't it, you know, kind of a little bit of a junk baller, you know, throws a lot of breaking stuff. But then they'll face, you know, like a David Price or a Kershaw and do pretty well some of the time. I think they like the fastball a little more. But no, they should hit lefties really well. I think we had talked earlier, I don't think there'll be a big problem getting at bats for everybody. One guy we didn't talk about that I think is really important that I'd like to hear your opinion on is, what do you think of VR at second base this year?
Well, I think he's, you know, I think the easy answer and probably the one I feel like is true is I think he's going to ring in somewhere between what he was in 2016 and what he was in 2017. I feel like I'm really, you know, gosh, it's so hard to put any stock into spring training stats, and I know I shouldn't, but it was really interesting that VR last year had a horrendous spring and just came out of the gates just awful. And this year, like, everything was like 100 points higher, on base, OPS, batting average. Everything across the board was about 100 points higher than last spring, and you just feel like there's certainly more, way more potential to do, you know, what he did in 16. Last year was just, for whatever reason, it just went south on him and he could really never pull himself out of it. I think defensively, as a guy who played a passable shortstop, he should be a good second baseman. The base running errors we've grown accustomed to, but he can also wreak some havoc out there too. I'm not opposed to it. I think, you know, the guys that we have, I think if speaking in like Craig Counsell speak, the second base position group, I think between, you know, Perez when you need to, of course, Sogard, you know, obviously provided a lift last year. I think those three guys, I think we're going to have an above average, you know, position group there at second. And I'm not opposed to giving VR a bunch of ABs and letting him try to figure it out as a guy that is still an incredibly cheap option, you know, for the team. What are your thoughts?
No, I think you're right on. There's no way he's as good as he was 2 years ago. At least I don't think there's any way.
Yeah.
And there's probably no way he's as bad And if Hughes is bad, they have enough other options that they can dump him, you know, or they can just bench him.
Yep.
They could bring up Dubon at that point to play kind of and let Perez or Sogard play more in second. But if he's a guy that could hit you, say, 12 home runs and still steal you 30, 35 bases, and you know, and be a solid defender at second, along with obviously Arcia is stellar up the middle, plus with Kane up the middle, like that could not only be a big benefit for the offense, but like the pitching staff could benefit greatly from that extra defense. So I think VR is kind of an important player this year, even though it gets overlooked.
Yeah, I completely agree, because you look around the diamond and, you know, we've got what we've got at first base, which we mentioned the Braun thing. Whatever happens to Aguilar is certainly going to be interesting, as a, you know, the guy is just he's a personal favorite of mine. So I'm hoping there's a way to keep him. It doesn't look like right now there is, beyond, of course, the opening day, when he'll for sure be there, and because there's no reason to cut him yet. But once they need another pitcher, because Council's, you know, boy, about 2 weeks into camp, he goes, you know, we're going 13 pitchers. So that erased the possibility, really, without an acquisition of Jesus Aguilar being on the team. Your third base, you've got Shaw, who is just terrific. And, you know, is a little bit of a concern in my mind for some slight regression. We'll see if he can do that again. And then, obviously, you talked about Arcia, who really came on at the plate as the season went on. Manny Pena, and Bandy had a good spring, too. Our catching duo, what are your thoughts there? With, of course, Vogt, you know, hopefully returning and, you know, being a factor at some point, too.
I like Pena. And I think he and Bandy, or he and Vogt, or whatever the combination is, makes for probably an average to above average, probably nationally an above average catching duo.
Mm-hmm.
I know they said Bandy made some mechanical adjustments. Like we said, spring, you never know. But a lot of those guys are, you know, like the whole launch angle revolution that people have looked at. Like, they figured out that the higher you hit the ball, the farther it's going to go. So, like, a few of those guys made adjustments. Maybe Bandy, you know, could hit 240. That's all you need out of that position. You know, I think Pena could probably hit 260, you know, getting the right match. If Sandy hits 240, that's a really solid catching duo, and they're good defensively.
Like, yep.
You don't need anything else out of those guys. You don't need a Buster Posey set of numbers. You just need them to be solid and not zeros in the lineup like we've had previously.
Yeah, well, there's Chad Moeller can attest to those days, and Keith Osick.
He did hit for the cycle once.
Yeah, that's got to be one of the oddest. Didn't your guy Dickerson, did he hit for the cycle as well? Did that happen, or am I imagining that? Chris Dickerson, don't you remember him, the outfielder? I feel like he had a crazy game. Maybe I'm off on that. No, there have been some random cycles in history, along with your
the Jack Muller days are over.
Yeah, that was insane. But yeah, I mean, so you're looking around the infield, you know, you're pretty stacked there. And then the guy that I'm most excited to see, and it makes sense because he's the new guy, but just based on what he did over the course of his career so far with the Marlins, and just how well he did in spring training, and then combine that with you're now going from playing in Marlins Park every day to playing in Miller Park, and you mentioned about the launch angle. Christian Yelich is the guy that I am just I can't wait to see batting out of that two hole. I think he's primed to have a really great year.
Yeah, and if he has embraced that launch angle idea, because he did have over, I think it was 50% of his batted balls were on the ground last year, and still had, you know, an incredible OBP and a really high average, and still hit, I think, 20 home runs or low 20s. If he can get a little more lift in that swing, he's a 30 home run guy at that point now, because they have to be so careful with the 400 on base percentage. And to have Kane lead off and Yelich hit two, and have guys on base at a 370 plus clip in front of Braun and Shaw and Domingo or Thames, like, that changes an offense even more than anything else. Because I thought, like, the Brewers offense was great last year, but they weren't always getting on base in front of them. Like, we had talked about Broxton, that is bad on base percentage. Like, you've got two guys now with, you know, probably in center, what's it, 80 points higher for an on base percentage out of Kane?
Yeah.
And Yelich, obviously, With his on-base percentage, Domingo was good last year, but Yelich is just kind of a different level of hitter. I think that's going to be a big difference, and teams will not enjoy pitching against the Brewers.
Well, you know, I wanted to get your thoughts, too, as we wrap things up for the second time today, on, you know, what your thoughts are on, you know, what they need to get to for wins, and ultimately, you know, are they going to be able to do that to compete for a wild card spot, or do you just see, you know, I guess the overarching worry that I have for this team is that a lot of times you see this where a team will kind of come out of nowhere one year and overachieve and really surprise everybody, and the next year take a dip back. And it doesn't mean that, you know, there's a, oh man, you know, we have to rebuild again or anything like that. But, you know, the rebuilding process isn't always linear. And so I think just, you know, looking at some guys like Shaw and Knebel and some of the guys that were, you know, Thames, a really terrible spring, you know, and was just kind of a, it was still good after April, but nowhere near, of course, where he started. You know, guys like that, I'm a little nervous about a team-wide, you know, regression that puts this team not at 75 wins again or anything crazy like that, but just puts them at about 82 and 80. I think that's kind of the downside of the scenario. I also think there's room for upside with the pitching. And like you said, perhaps a mid-season acquisition and Nelson comes back where they could win 92, 94, which would I think be their ceiling. So where do you think this team sits?
I think the over-under is about 87.5.
Okay.
You know, if everything goes right, you know, they're going to win 88 games or, you know, 88 games or more, make the right acquisition. If a couple guys get hurt, especially in the rotation, mm-hmm. I think they can last a few offensive injuries. Even if a Shaw goes down, you've got Hernandez, that, you know, Perez that can play over there.
Yeah.
And you know, you've got not enough pop to get other positions. But, I mean, a lot of it, I think, will come down to who are those other teams. You know, is it do the Phillies take that big step forward? They made a lot of moves. They've got Nola and Arrieta at the top of the rotation. The Braves might be the Brewers of this year, that team that's young and has some potential. They've got a lot of young arms that could pop up. I still see Domingo being a potential guy there, though. I just read from Dave O'Brien. Do you follow him on Twitter, the Braves writer?
Yes.
He's very good. And he was talking about how they have a couple more prospects out there that they like a lot. So I was asking why they wouldn't sign Bryce Harper, maybe because it's going to cost $400 million. But that's just one hindrance to him. But and the Cardinals will be good. The Rockies should be solid again. The D-backs, along with the Dodgers in that division. There's enough good teams that they won't sneak in. They will have to be a good team, and they'll have to win in the upper 80s to make a run at it. I think they can, but, you know, it's not a slam dunk. You're not looking at the Cubs and saying, man, every guy's a winner. You know, everyone's going to do the job. You're nervous, but I assume you feel the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it all kicks off tomorrow, 3:10 p.m. in San Diego. Kind of a really interesting first stretch for the Brewers after, of course, playing the Padres for three games. It is Cardinal and Cub heavy throughout the month of April. So the Brewers have to hope that those guys in the back end of the rotation that they're kind of gambling on a little bit, because they didn't go out and sign or trade for a veteran, that those guys can come through, as you mentioned, while Nelson is still healing and you know, other trade prospects are on the back burner. So thanks, Rob, for joining us again.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, I will be at the April 7th Cup game in Milwaukee.
I mean, we can do a whole other podcast on that. Just I read with a mixture of surprise and shock that, and I know you are a little bit more brave than I am, but I just can't deal with the Cubs fan invasion. I just don't do well with it mentally.
I tried to do my part to stop it, though. I bought tickets as a Brewer fan in the Wisconsin only sale to do my part to fill it with Brewer fans.
Well,
I'm hoping that it's a little better.
We appreciate your effort on that. Okay, thanks very much, Rob. We'll talk soon.
See ya.